Dr. Furin, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Let's begin at the point of having you describe what kind of doctor are you trying to train in this special and unique program?
Well, it's a good and important question. Many of us who are working in the fields of medicine and public health today recognize that one of the greatest problems that we face is the lack of equity and access to health care on a global level. And what we're trying to do is train physicians who are then poised to act in the field of health equity, not just in terms of clinical skills, but also in terms of understanding policy, research, and programmatic issues that are important in providing equitable health care to people around the world.
What exists for these doctors at the moment?
So there's actually very little that exists for these doctors at the moment. If you talk to people who are currently working in this field today, many of us have had to sort of cobble together or piece together our training and our careers. And we felt that the issues were just too important to leave young, enthusiastic physicians with that sense of sort of having to put together their own training programs. We want to be like the fields of cardiology, where there's a very set structure, there's a very set pathway that one can follow with some flexibility in it, but that we provide people with rigorous training opportunities. I think what exists out there today is often a series of disjointed experiences that people have with a month spent working abroad or a month spent working at a homeless shelter here in the United States. And residents and young physicians aren't often given the tools that they need to synthesize this experience and to place it into the broader context of healthcare today. And we felt that this issue is just way too important and that we need leaders who can synthesize all aspects of health equity, speak to them intelligently, and decide where they want to go with their careers in terms of helping the poor.
And the answer to those issues is this program called the Residency in Global Health Equity and Internal Medicine.
You got it.
What does this program provide that typically doesn't exist?
So we're fortunate enough to be based at Brigham and Women's Hospital, which is one of the finest teaching hospitals in the U.S. today. But what we found when I was going through my training there and working half-time in Peru and Haiti and Russia is that many of the things that one learns, even in a very high-quality academic teaching hospital in the United States, are simply not applicable in resource-poor settings. So, for example, at 2 in the morning when I'm working at Brigham and Women's Hospital, I can get an MRI scan on my patient. I can have that scan read immediately by a specialist in neuroradiology. When I'm in Haiti, we're lucky to have access to electricity in the middle of the night, let alone the types of diagnostic things that we have access to at tertiary care hospitals in the United States. So one of our goals was really to provide residents with the clinical skills that they would need to work in resource-poor settings. In addition to that, I think whenever one starts working on issues of health equity, you're inevitably faced with issues of public health, health policy, and with research that one may not be faced with in the traditional fields of and practice of medicine. And so we really wanted our residents to have exposure so that even if they decided not to go into public health or health policy per se, that they could speak fluently with people who are actively engaged in those issues. And so we try to provide a structure in which residents are not only exposed to all of these, but they have true meaningful experiences that they can then carry across all 4 years of their residency in these areas.
And from what you've said, it sounds as if you're asking doctors to be much more than what we in the United States traditionally accept as a doctor.
I think so, and I think that our trainees have been incredible in that they're just the most dedicated group of enthusiastic young doctors that I've ever had the pleasure of working with. But I think that working in the field of health equity, one is often required to truly address the needs of one's patients to be able to speak to issues of social policy. HIV is the perfect example. I mean, HIV is so tightly linked to poverty and inequality and gender rights. And there's a huge policy machine that circulates around HIV, particularly in poor countries. And to be a doctor who wants to take care of those patients, you have to be able to speak to the policy community. You have to understand how gender rights and women's issues shape who's at risk for the epidemic. If not, you're merely putting a Band-Aid on the situation. And that's not acceptable to us in terms of training. And it's not acceptable to our trainees either in terms of the medical care that they want to provide to their patients.
Well, it sounds as if on some occasions you're asking them really to be prepared to be politicians.
In some cases, we very much are asking them to do that. But we're trying to do that. Many of our colleagues have found themselves in that position without the background or the skills that they felt were necessary to allow them to do that in a good way. What we're trying to do with our trainees is to say, yeah, you are going to have to be a politician sometimes as much as a doctor, but we're not going to throw you in there to sink or swim. We're going to teach you how to do this in a structured way, in a meaningful way, so that when you are put on the spot to advocate for your patients, you're going to be able to do that in a way that you feel comfortable with and a way that's good for the people that you're trying to serve. And so in trying to acknowledge that and bring that to the forefront, I think we're doing a real service to the trainees.
And when the program was created, a survey was taken of other doctors in the hospital. And one thing that became apparent was the need for a mentoring
situation.
Why was that so critical to this kind of program?
Well, I think this type of program is somewhat unique in that there are many pathways that one can take in the field of health equity. You can decide to be a doctor who spends all their time in a clinical setting seeing 300 patients a day. You can decide to be a health policy advocate at the highest levels of the WHO. And really, the field is so broad that I think once a resident or a young physician decides which way they want to go, having someone who's sort of seen the ropes and had the experience becomes terribly important. I think in all aspects of medicine, even, you know, in fields like cardiology, infectious diseases, you know, endocrinology, the role of a mentor in shaping someone's career and life is key. But I think in this field where there hasn't been a clear path traced about how to go about doing this, and there are so many ways that one can go about doing this, having a good, solid mentor is absolutely critical to the success of a trainee.
And I know this program is just at the beginning stages. How many residents are going through it, and what's been the what's happened with them so far? Have there been surprises?
There have been many surprises, most of them good. We started with two residents in our first year and have actually been able to increase the size of the program every year so that we now have a total of 11 residents enrolled in the program, which is great. The need is much greater. We have much more interest than we're able to meet in terms of you know, the number of positions that are available, and we're hoping that we'll continue to increase the size of our program and that other hospitals and training programs, not just in medicine, but in other fields, will take an interest and some commitment towards doing this. Our residents have already worked on multiple projects in many countries, including Haiti, Peru, Russia, Uganda, Tanzania, Rwanda, and Burundi, and we're starting another project in Lesotho, as well as a project here in Boston. I think the major surprises that have come have been really just the incredible dedication and hard work that the residents are willing to undergo. I always tell them, you know, there will be bumps in the road. We're a new program. And they've just been incredibly open-minded and enthusiastic, not only about participating in the program, but really seeing it as an opportunity to build a program. And they know that their contributions are not just as trainees, but as active participants who can help build something for the future for other people who are interested in this. And they've really just exceeded all expectations in terms of stepping up to the plate to do that. I think one of the other big surprises has been how much support we've received from the hospital and the administration here at Brigham and Women's, not just in terms of the internal medicine residency, but the hospital as a whole. It's just been incredibly overwhelming and wonderful how much they're behind this idea, and not just with their words and their gestures, but really they go out of their way from the littlest things to helping us make the schedules to really big things like helping provide coverage for residents when they're in the field, and it's been a wonderful experience for us all.
And one of the challenges, though, is there's not enough time in a four-year program to take both the more traditional courses plus the kinds of activities you were just describing. So how do you manage that issue?
It's certainly been an issue in terms of the time, and now with the new work hour restrictions and things that we're having to operate in from the ACGME point of view. What we try to do is give residents a good balance so that they have enough time in the field and enough time here. But I think ultimately, in some ways, they feel a little bit torn. When they're here in the States, they're worried about what's going on in their field sites. And when they're in their field sites, they're worried about what's going on here in the States. And I think that's really one of the unique challenges of a program like this, is that sort of back and forth. And I think that's where the role of the mentor and sort of group support can come in, is that many of us also went through this when we were residents, trying to strike that balance. And, you know, we get together frequently as a group when we can to socialize and just give each other support. And we've also started a newsletter. One of the residents started this as well, that can be accessed online for residents when they're in the field and feeling like they need to have support. So,
and you focused most of your conversation on the places overseas where mm-hmm. some of these doctors have been. But does this program also apply to communities in the United States that are underserved?
Absolutely. It applies greatly. And that's why we very specifically chose the term health equity instead of international health. I think most of us who work at teaching hospitals in the United States, many of which are urban, you know, we only have to go 5 or 10 minutes from our hospital to see settings which are, you know, scarily and strikingly reminiscent of some of the poorest countries that I've seen in the world. And I think our citizens are uniquely affected in some ways by the gross inequalities that exist, you know, just a 10-minute bus ride away. And so all of our residents rotate through one of our local projects here in Boston, and one of them will be spending a majority of her time here in Boston working on one of our HIV treatment outreach programs. And we see the same things, that it's, you know, gender inequality and poverty and lack of access to educational and job opportunities that are really fueling the HIV epidemic here in the U.S. as well. So I think the lessons that we learn in other countries are very applicable here, and it's one of the wonderful things with the residency is to see the exchange of ideas that's able to take place between residents who are focused in poor countries such as Haiti and Rwanda, and those that are based in middle-income countries such as Peru and Russia, and those that are based here in the U.S.
A final question. I'm guessing that one indication of success will be, are other medical schools coming to Brigham and Women's for advice on how to build similar programs? Has that begun to happen or not yet?
Yep, absolutely. It's begun to happen with several other major medical centers, probably the biggest one right now being University of Miami. But we've also been working very closely with Duke University and with UCSF and with our sister organization here in Boston, the Massachusetts General Hospital. And I think we're all learning from one another how best to provide for our trainees who really desire to make a difference in terms of health inequality. And so we have a lot of conversations, lots of teleconferences and video conferences about how to build curriculum, how to learn from, you know, the experiences that we've had at Brigham and Women's. And we're very enthused about the fact that other internal medicine programs have been interested in working on this. And we're hoping, as I said, you know, this health equity isn't only a problem for internal medicine, but also surgery, OB-GYN, pediatrics, and, you know, as much as we can work with those other subspecialties and specialties to try to level the playing field for the poor, we're excited about and interested in doing that.
Thank you so much, Dr. Jennifer Furin of Brigham and Women's Hospitals in Boston.